There are people out there, and I'm one of them, and maybe you are too, who get goosebumps every time they see an American flag. It's an odd reaction if you think about it analytically. I mean, after all, a flag is just a piece of cloth and a colorful decorative pattern. There's nothing inherently magical about it. But of course, that interpretation misses the whole point. Yes, it's just a piece of cloth, but at the same time, it has come to stand for all the virtues and characteristics of our nation as a whole. So when a person sees a flag, he also sees a powerful, resonant symbol of everything that our nation stands for. A flag, like countless other things in our environment, is an anchor, a sensory stimulus that has been linked to a specific set of emotions and states. An anchor can be a word or a phrase or a touch or an object. It can be something we see, hear, feel, taste, or smell. Another word for anchors might be triggers. They are the triggers to various personal states. Isn't that what happens when you see the flag? You immediately experience the powerful emotions and sensations that represent how you feel about the nation as a whole, because those feelings have been linked to or associated with this particular color and design of cloth. Our world is full of anchors. Some of them are profound, some of them a bit trivial. If I start to say to you, Winston tastes good like A, chances are you'll automatically say, cigarette should. If I ask you, how do you spell relief? Most of you say, R-O-L-A-I-D-S. You may think cigarettes are awful. You probably know that relief is spelled R-E-L-I-E-F, but advertising has been so effective that it has anchored a response in you, even though you don't believe it. The same sort of stimulus response occurs all the time in other aspects of our life. We live in a stimulus response world. For example, many people, when they receive the stimulus that causes them to feel stressed, automatically reach for food or cigarettes or something to drink. You can see people and instantly go into state, good or bad, depending upon the feelings you've associated with them. You can hear a song and have an instantaneous change of state. All the results of powerful anchors. Anchoring is a way to give an experience permanence. We've learned how to change our states by changing what we represent to ourselves, how we represent them, or how we use our physiology. But in order to create long-term change, we need to make sure we develop a new pattern of representing things. By learning to anchor, we can create a consistent triggering mechanism that will automatically cause you to create the state you desire in any situation without you even having to think about it. When you anchor something effectively enough, it'll be there whenever you want it. The same sort of response occurs all the time. There are many kinds of anchors. There are visual anchors, auditory anchors, and kinesthetic anchors. There are certain things that we see that instantaneously change our state and our emotion. For example, seeing a spinning red light in your rearview mirror is a very powerful anchor for most people that'll change their physiology quickly. Others of us have auditory anchors. Almost all of us have a song that when we hear it, it reminds us that the first time we're with someone we really cared about. All of these are examples of anchors. And we all anchor regularly. In fact, it's impossible not to. All anchoring is a created association of thoughts, ideas, and feelings with a specific stimulus. Do you remember studying about Dr. Ivan Pavlov when you were in school? Pavlov took those hungry dogs and put meat in front of them so they could smell it and see it, but not actually get at it. The meat became a powerful stimulus to the dogs' feelings of hunger. Soon they were salivating heavily. While they were in this intense state of salivation, Pavlov consistently rang a bell with a specific tone. Pretty soon, he no longer needed the meat. He could just ring the bell, and the dogs would salivate as if the meat itself were in front of them. He had associated the feelings of hunger to the sound of the bell. He had created an association between the sound of the bell with the feelings of hunger. From then on, all he had to do was ring the bell, and the dogs would literally go into a salivation state. We, too, live in a stimulus-response world, where much of human behavior consists of unconscious, programmed responses. For example, many people, when they're under stress, immediately reach for a cigarette, alcohol, or in some cases, something to snort. They don't think about it. They're just like Pavlov's dogs. In fact, many of these people would like to change their behavior, but they feel their behavior is unconscious and uncontrollable. The key to creating change is to become conscious of the process so that if the anchors that you have presently do not support you, you can eliminate them and replace them with new stimulus response linkages that put you in the positive states that you desire. So how do anchors get created? Well, it's real simple. Anytime you have an intense feeling state, and while you're in that state, someone does something consistently, that thing they do consistently gets linked to the state you're in. For example, when most people go to a funeral, most people feel sad. Is that a natural state, or is that a learned condition? It's a learned condition. We've learned to associate feelings of sadness to funerals. Now, if you go to a funeral and it's a member of your family, is that a learned response to cry or be depressed or upset? You bet it is. There are many cultures where people celebrate when someone dies, as we talked about earlier. The difference is they have different associations to death. But regardless of all these things, if a person is there and it's their father who died and they're in a very intense state, that is, their whole body is in one primary state, say depression, for example, and someone comes along trying to cheer them up and comes by and goes, "It'll be okay, John," and hits John on the shoulder a few times in one particular place, and then someone else does that again in the same place and says, "Yeah, John, it'll be okay," if John doesn't change states, that is, if while they're touching him, he stays in this intense negative state, then that state will get associated to that touch, just as the dog's salivating state got associated to the bell because the bell was rung while they were in the peak of that experience. What will the result for John be? 6 months might go by and John's okay about his father dying. His father was 110. It was okay. The bottom line is now he doesn't think about it anymore at all. And one day John goes to a party and somebody comes up and goes, "Hey John, how's it going?" And they hit him on the shoulder in the exact same position. Guess what's going to happen to John within a few moments? He's going to feel totally depressed and he won't even know why. Has this ever happened to you? Have you ever felt depressed and not known why? I'll tell you what happened. A negative anchor or association was triggered that you weren't even aware of. And by the way, it's not just done by touching. Maybe you heard a song in the background and weren't aware of it consciously, but it triggered some old feelings of depression or sadness. Maybe someone looked at you a certain way. Have you ever had someone look at you a certain way and you got upset with them and said, "Don't look at me that way," and they went, "What way?" And they were sincere? Why were you upset? Because someone else looked at you that way when you were feeling very upset at one time. And as a result, you've associated that look to something else. That's what anchoring is all about. Advertising is using anchoring all the time. Here's how advertising works. Why do people drink Coke and Pepsi and all those kind of things? Why do people smoke? Well, here you got this person, right? And their behavior is the result of their what? The state that they're in, right? And state is the result of two things, physiology and what? Internal representations. So what advertisers do is they attempt to link their product to some internal state that will produce the behavior of your use. Now, how do they do that? They do it by transferring anchors. See, what does Pepsi do? They hire a guy like Lionel Richie or Michael Jackson. So here's Lionel Richie or Michael Jackson, who spent their entire lives working to become cultural anchors. When people think of them, they think of great feelings. Like Lionel Richie's worked really hard. He's had a number one hit at least once a year for the last 10 years. It's pretty incredible, isn't it? So he spent 10 years so that people, when they think of Lionel Richie, have all these great associations, right? All these great feelings. So now what do? They want to make sure that when you think of their product, you make a representation that puts you in a state of feeling great, which makes you want their product. So what do? They flash Lionel Richie doing his singing and dancing, which puts you in an intensely positive state, doesn't it? Now while you're in the peak of the experience, what do they flash? They go, "Pepsi." And they got Lionel Richie again. And they go, "Pepsi, Lionel Richie, Pepsi, Lionel Richie, Pepsi, Lionel Richie, Pepsi, Lionel Richie, Pepsi." So pretty soon, what gets linked? That positive state gets linked to what? Pepsi. Well, Lionel Richie already was there. They used Lionel Richie to switch it over. So now Pepsi is associated with that positive state. See? Same thing with Bill Cosby and Coke. Same thing with beer commercial. Ever seen a beer commercial? Yeah. They got these beer commercials, and what they do is they show these incredibly attractive people. Never big fat people with beer bellies, right? It's always this thin, you know, well-dressed, people having fun or not well-dressed, but they always look great, right? They're always having a blast. They never look drunk as a skunk. You never see them crashing in their car. You never see their breath and their halitosis all over somebody. You don't see them acting like a jerk, right? You never see any of that stuff, do you? All you see is these people just happy, feeling good, everything is great. Right? And at the peak of that experience, they go, "Miller time." Then they show some other anchor. All these people getting together, things that would make you feel great. And they use visual, auditory, and kinesthetic stimulus to get you in an intense state. And then they go, "Miller time." Then all of a sudden, you see a jet airplane go by and go, whoosh. Well, what has that got to do with drinking beer? If he's drinking, we're all in trouble. But guess what? It puts you in a what? Intense state. And then they go, "Miller time." They show these people, you know, breaking through, you know, like winning in some kind of sport. And then they go, "Miller time." If they're drunk, they aren't winning. Right? But see, all they do is they link it. So all these positive feelings. So anytime you want those positive feelings, what you represent in your mind is what? It's Miller time. Put you in a state and you go for it. Why did people smoke? Especially in the early days. Because all they did was they took something totally destructive to your body, but linked it to states. and feelings that you wanted. They took people that you were famous, they took people and showed them becoming more elegant, becoming more loved, being more sexy, right? Being more classy. And they associate all those things so that pretty soon you want to be classy, so the representation you make is, let's smoke, put you in a state, and you go produce that behavior. And when you smoked your first cigarette, did you go, boy, that's really great? What happened? Your body cough? But why did you keep doing it? Because they kept representing to you, oh no, this is good. So your brain literally began to say, oh, this is good. And even in spite of the pain and destruction to your body, you kept on doing it. So there are many kinds of anchors. There are positive anchors that we can generate, and there are negative anchors. Let's figure out how anchors occur. Four steps. Step one, if you want to create an anchor for yourself or anyone else, the first thing you've got to do is you've got to put the person in the state that you want to anchor. For example, if you want to anchor someone in feelings of pride, you'd have them remember a time in their life when they felt really proud and step back into that experience as if they were there. You would literally put them in that state. You might have them show you how they would stand, how they'd breathe, what they'd say, what they'd sound like if they felt totally proud. Once the person is in the peak of that experience where they're fully associated into that emotion that you want to anchor, then the second step is, while they're at the peak, you simply provide a unique stimulus. You could touch a person on the shoulder and make a little noise going, "Ernt," and while they're feeling proud, say, "Show me how you stand when you're proud." And while they stand that way, you touch their shoulder and go, "Ernt." You ask them to speak the way they speak when they feel proud, and they have this nice tone of voice, and right at the peak, you go, "Ernt," and you touch their shoulder. You do this over and over again while they're at the peak of the experience. Step three, you now have an anchor, so you want to get them in a neutral state to see if whether it works. So you ask that person to just change their body, change how they're feeling, move around. Then step four is you test the anchor. So you'd reach up, touch in the same spot, and go, "Ernt," and you notice what happens in their body. Does their face go back to the state that they were in, the smile they had when they were proud? Do they go to a similar posture again? Does their body snap back into a similar position? If your anchor works, this is exactly what you will see. You'll see the person actually respond back almost on automatic. Just as they do when you say, "Winston tastes good like A," they say, "Cigarette should." The same is true when you anchor someone's physiology. If you anchor them in a certain physical state and then you touch them there again in the same way, their body will actually move back to the same position. When I demonstrate this on videotape or in seminars, people are fascinated. It's like as if their brain and body go on automatic. They don't even have control anymore. Their body just snaps back into position. This shouldn't surprise us, since most of us do a lot of things on automatic and we have a hard time stopping them, like biting fingernails, for example. There are four key elements to doing an effective anchor. The first key is to make sure that when you anchor someone, you anchor them while they're in an intense state. If you anchor someone when they're not feeling any one particular emotion, where they're a bit ambivalent, then you're going to get an ambivalent anchor. If you want a powerful anchor, you need to anchor someone where they're having strong feelings about something, where their whole body is involved. So that's the first key to an effective anchor. The second key is timing. When you provide the anchor, the sound, or the voice tone, or the look, or the touch, you want to do it while the person is at the peak of the experience. If I use the metaphor of a roller coaster, you don't want to do it right as they're about to go over the edge. You don't want to go it on the way down. You want to anchor them right at the peak, right at the top of the roller coaster. Now, how do you know what the peak of someone's experience is? Well, you just observe. If I were to tell you I want you to anchor me right now, and I were to demonstrate a certain quality of movement and say, "I feel great," and I said, "I want you to anchor me when I'm talking about this," then you wouldn't do it when I was saying, "I feel." You'd say, "I feel great." Right at the moment when I say "great," at that moment, you could hear in my voice that that was the peak. That's the time in which you'd provide a stimulus. You might at that point touch my shoulder and say, "Yes." You might snap your fingers. But the key is you'd want to set that anchor by doing something consistently while I was at the peak. You would consistently snap your fingers while I was at the peak several times until later you could just snap your fingers and I'd go back into that state. I'd feel the same kinds of emotions inside my mind and body. The third key to effective anchoring is you want to make sure you have a unique stimulus. The more unique the stimulus is, the more effective the anchor is going to be. For example, you don't have to just put people in a state to be able to anchor them. You can just catch them there. If I see someone who's laughing hysterically, I'll often go up and anchor them. I'll go up while they're laughing, and I might squeeze the ear and go, "Ah," and make some unique sound. The reason I don't just squeeze their ear or just make the sound is by having both an auditory stimulus, the "Ah," and the kinesthetic of touching the ear, I have a more unique stimulus. I can come back a few minutes later after the person stopped laughing and I can go, "Ah," and touch their ear and they'll start to smile and laugh again. It's literally programmed into their nervous system. All it took was me making that sound and touching them that way a few times while they're in the peak of laughter to be able to create that association. Now, I could have also gone up to that person and, like, shook their hand while they were laughing. And I could come back later and shake their hand, and that would trigger laughter again. The only challenge here is lots of people are going to shake their hands, and they're going to be in many different states. As a result, that's not a very unique stimulus, and that anchor will probably become diluted. You got to make sure that you use the touch of an ear that rarely gets touched, or a certain tone of voice, or a certain look that the person has never seen before. That way, it'll have long-lasting power. And finally, the fourth key is, in order to have an anchor work effectively, you've got to replicate it effectively. In other words, if I anchor a person by touching their ear and going, ah, then in order to set that anchor again, I've got to do it again. I've got to use the same tone of voice. I can't go, ah, and I expect it to work. Because the sound of aunt is not associated to laughter. It's the sound and touch of aunt, in this case, that would produce that result. So we must duplicate the same stimulus to trigger the same response. Now, anchoring may sound a bit complicated at first, except when you begin to realize that it's impossible not to anchor. You are anchoring constantly.
You can't not anchor. Every one of you is anchoring right now. That's what I want you to get. The problem is most of you are not aware of it, and many times, unknowingly, you may be creating negative anchors for yourself and for other people. I'll give you an example. Becky and I packed up for a trip for 2 weeks, and we were going to be going to catch a plane, and then the plane got canceled. So we went to a hotel nearby, right by the airport, and the only thing available is a Holiday Inn. So we pulled up to this Holiday Inn, and there's no valet out front. So we parked the car, we go in and we register and say, hey, listen, can you get, you know, a valet to park our car, and can you get somebody to bring our bags up? The registration man says, well, I'll get the bellman to park the car. We don't have a valet, and we'll get him to bring your bags up. So I said, okay, fine. So we go up to our room. Well, a good 20 minutes go by, and our stuff's still not there. 30 minutes go by. Now we're going, this is ridiculous. So we call downstairs, and I say, listen, you know, we're still missing our bags. I talk to the bellman. He goes, what bags? I go, the bags, you know, in the car out front. He goes, what car out front? I said, is this some kind of joke? He said, no. He said, I'm the only one down here, and there's no car out here, and there's no bags. So I said, I'll be right down. So I go down there, I find out, oh, guess what? The guy at the registration desk decided nobody was there, so he parked the car. I thought, okay, great. I said, would you just get the bags and bring them up? So the guy goes downstairs and there's no bags in the car. I said, well, you know, the registration guy must have taken them out. He said, no, he didn't take anything out. He said, when he went out to move the car, there were no bags in it. So as it turns out, somebody came while the car was in front of there and stole all of our baggage. Almost everything we own clothes-wise, 2 weeks worth of baggage is stolen. In our baggage was a bunch of great electronical equipment, my wallet, see, with all my credit cards, with my, I even had my passport, everything. I even had a cashier's check that had just been paid to me from the Army for $25,000 that I'd already countersigned. Yeah, I'd already countersigned, so it was cashable. So needless to say, I did not go into the best state. Neither did Becky. So we go upstairs and I'm just like so angry, I'm seeing red, you know, I'm just going, this is incredible. And so I was in the real angry state for about 10 or 15 minutes, and I realized, hey, you know what? Being angry is not going to change a darn thing. So I figured, I got to change my state, because I was really in a terrible place. So I changed my internal representations. I imagined the guy who stole my clothes trying to put them on. So that changed me, right? So now I'm in okay state, you know, and everything's fine. And then a few minutes go by, and I look over at Becky, and all of a sudden I'm angry, right? And I'm thinking, God, I noticed that she left the cap off the toothpaste. Now, that doesn't usually bother me at all. I mean, who cares with caps on the toothpaste? But all of a sudden, I'm like, argh! And I look at her, and I don't have this attraction. All of a sudden, I look at her, and I have all this anger feeling. Right? And I'm thinking, God, is the honeymoon over or what? And then I thought, wait a second, Robbins, you run your state. What is this about? And then I realized, what had happened? What occurred? Anybody know? I wasn't still angry about the other thing. I'd let go of it. While I was angry, whose face was I seeing? Becky's. I mean, I was in a pretty intense state. And while I was there at the peak of the experience, I consistently saw this unique stimulus called Becky's face, right? Over and over and over again while I was in this state. Now I've let go of the thing, but every time I look at Becky's face, I go into what state? Intense. There are two ways relationships die. One way is through strategies that are no longer being met. Right? People no longer have the same attraction strategy being met, or they no longer have their love strategy being met. The other way is through negative anchors. They have a series of experiences in life where they have negative anchors and they become so strong that when the person's around the person, they can't stand even be around them anymore. And when they're around other people, they feel better. You know why? Because the other people haven't been around them while they've been in negative states and they don't have any negative anchors to them. So they go, God, I feel so much better with this new person. Isn't that amazing? And by the way, is this an isolated instance like just happened for us? No, almost all of us. Now, what about when you get in an argument with somebody you love? And then you're angry and you're saying things to each other and you're seeing each other's face. More negative anchors. So pretty soon they can't stand being around each other anymore. That's why it's really important you break your patterns and not get into these intense arguments. Some people say, no, no, say the truth. Say how you feel. Well, how you feel is all determined by how you represent things. So how you feel right now may be totally absurd in another context. You don't want to buy into that philosophy. I know one major school of psychology, standard school of psychology, that teaches how to resolve family problems by bringing the couple in. Here's what they do. They set the man and woman here and they go, look, most important thing in a relationship is honesty. And I think the problem in your relationship is you've just not told each other the truth about how you feel. You've been harboring these anger feelings. And they both go, yeah, we've been harboring these feelings. And the man says, okay, here's what I want you to do. The therapist says, I want you to look at your wife and I want you to tell her all the things you're upset with her about. So the man says, well, I'm upset about the way you treated me in the restaurant the other day. And he says, no, tell her how you feel. Let it all out. He goes, well, I'm upset at you. He goes, no, let it all out. I am really upset at you. That was totally unfair. Then he says to the man's wife, says, now it's your turn. You let him have it. Well, she's ready to let him have it after hearing all that stuff. You say this, well, what about this and this and this? And she's screaming and yelling, looking in his face, linking all her anger to his face. And he's hearing all the stuff, getting angry, looking at her face. And at the very end, the therapist goes, now, don't you both feel better knowing you're being honest with each other? And what is the final result here out of that therapist's total ignorance to how the brain and emotions work? Now, the therapist is a good person, really cares, but out of his ignorance, and let's just face it, stupidity. They just don't know and aren't paying attention. What he's done is done this couple the greatest disservice he possibly could, because in supposedly creating honesty, he's created such negative anchors that they, although they'll feel good on the one hand for letting go, on the other hand, they'll always harbor, when they look at each other, these incredible negative emotions. There are some therapists, one in particular named Virginia Satir, who's very famous, very, very incredible woman who understands the dynamic of anchoring. So what does she do is she takes a couple in and she says, okay, here's what I want you to do. They're all angry. She goes, wait a second. All that anger, all that stuff is hurt. You feel hurt, and you feel hurt because your expectations haven't been met in some way. Something hasn't worked out the way you want. You feel a feeling of loss. So let's just change all that stuff. You guys got together because you loved each other. Here's what I want you to do, sir. I want you to look at your wife the way you looked at her when you wanted to marry her, when you were hoping she'd say yes. I want you to say something to her the way you said it when you guys were totally in love and attracted. So he goes, well, I really love you. She goes, no, say it to her like you mean it. So use the same technique, just in a new direction, right? So he goes, well, honey, you know, I really do love you. You're incredible, you know? And guess what? As he starts to do that, that makes him start to represent all the things he can remember about her that's great. And he starts seeing things in a whole new light. And what is he anchoring all this positive emotion to? Her face. And she does the same with him. They leave out as lovebirds, totally in love, and they're both seeing their lives in a whole different way, and they're anchored back in the state that built their relationship in the first place. Isn't that a bit more elegant? So anchoring is one of the most important things you can do in your life. You have to collapse the anchor. Now, would you like to know how to collapse an anchor? Here's how you do it. Jot it down. First, you have to create a positive anchor. You have to create a positive anchor, a series of them. Now, how do you create a positive anchor? You put yourself in a positive, intense what? When you're fully associated at the peak, you provide a unique and specific what? Stimulus. All you have to do something like that. For example, let's say the guy's got a negative anchor here on this arm. What does he do to get rid of it? Well, he thinks of a time in his life when he felt totally joyous, happy, powerful. He remembers that time, he sits the way he'd be sitting, he breathes the way he was breathing, and then he imagines being there. And right at the peak, when he's feeling best, what does he do? He goes, yeah, yeah, yeah. Now, he thinks of another time when he felt phenomenal. I mean, like, just he was on top of the world. He remembers it, steps in experience, breathes that way, feels that way, and then he goes, yeah, yeah, yeah. Thinks of another time when he felt phenomenal. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Now, changes the physiology, and he goes, yeah. And guess what? You can see his face, right? He goes into state. So now he has a positive anchor that works. That's all it takes to create an anchor. So what does he do now? He collapses the two, which means he fires them off simultaneously. So he goes, yeah. And what happens? Well, the first thing that happens is steam comes out of his ears. Because he's fired off two different nervous processes in his brain simultaneously. And what they do is they link up in the brain, and now the brain has a choice. If you hit him here or you hit him here, it can fire off either positive or negative. You know what's interesting about the human brain? It always selects the most resourceful state. Always, yes, always. In 4 years of working with people, I've never seen one person, when they had a choice in their nervous system between positive and negative, I've never seen their nervous system pick negative. I've seen it take positive or neutral, but never negative. as long as the positive anchor was as strong, I mean, the emotion of positivity was as strong as the negative was. If you just get a nice feeling anchored here and you got a terrible feeling here, that's not going to work, is it? But if you got a tremendous, powerful positive and you got a negative here that's really powerful, you fire them both off, now your brain rewires it and it literally collapses the anchor. It eliminates it, okay? The other thing is, like with Becky and I have a negative anchor to her face, so what do you have to do? All we had to do is do something that would put us in intensely positive states while we looked at each other's faces. And we did something interesting that created us intensely powerful positive states while we saw each other's faces. Anger became collapsed. Then you look at each other's faces, you have a different kind of feeling, much more positive. You now have the resources to change your feelings and your behaviors in any situation by changing what you represent, how you represent things, and how you use your body. This tape has given you the additional tool of being able to reprogram your behaviors long term. Anchoring is one of the most powerful tools you have. You know how to change your state. You know how to change your behavior. Now you can anchor those results so they're consistent. Take advantage of this. And when this tape is complete now, set a series of positive anchors for yourself. Things that you can call upon to trigger yourself into a positive state at any moment in time, no matter what's happening around you.